Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna. Text 41. Sri Shuka Uvacha Iti Abhishtuya Bhumanam Tri Parikramya Padayo Natva Abhishtam Jagat Data Swadhama Pratyapadyata. Sri Shuka Uvacha Ityabhishtuya Bhumanam Tri Parikramya Padayo Natvabhishtam Jagadatha Swadhama Pratyapadyata Sri Shuka Uvacha. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, Iti, thus, Abhishtuya, offering praise, Bhumanam, to the unlimited Supreme Lord, Tri, three times, Parikramya, circumambulating, Padayo, at his feet, Natva, bowing down, Abhishtam, desired, Jagat, of the universe, Data, the creator, Swadhama, to his personal abode, Pratyapadyata, returned. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, having thus offered his prayers, Brahma circumambulated his worshipable Lord, the unlimited personality of Godhead, three times, and then bowed down at his lotus feet. The appointed creator of the universe then returned to his own residence. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Devoted servants. Although Lord Brahma had prayed to take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan, or even in the area surrounding Vrindavan, Lord Krishna, by his silent response to Brahma's prayers, indicated that Brahma should return to his own abode. First, Brahma had to complete his personal devotional service of universal creation. Then he could come to Vrindavan and get the mercy of the inhabitants there. In other words, a devotee should always be attentive to executing his personal devotional service properly. This is more important than trying to live in the Lord's abode. Well, this is a very important point. I had my own little experience with the same principle. And definitely, at the time, Srila Prabhupada wanted me in Bombay and not in Vrindavan. On one occasion, he referred to Raghunath Das Goswami and said that Raghunath Das Goswami managed his father's estate like an expert businessman. And then he went to Vrindavan and became a Goswami. So in the same way, you should also manage your spiritual father's estate, meaning the Juhu project, expertly, and then go to Vrindavan and become a Goswami. So now we will proceed to text 42. Tato nun japya bhagavan swabhavam pragavastitam vastan pulinam aninye yatapurva sakam sakam. Tato nu gyapaya bhagavan swabhavam pragavastitam vatsam pulinam aniye yatapurva sakam swakam. Tata, then anugyapya, giving permission, Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, Sabhuvam, to his own son, Brahma, Prak, from before, Avastitam, situated, Vatsan, the calves, Pulinam, to the shore of the river, Aninye, he brought, Yatapurva, just as before, Sakam, where the friends were present, Svakam, his own. Translation. After granting his son Brahma permission to leave, the Supreme Personality of Godhead took the calves, who were still where they had been a year earlier, and brought them to the river bank, where he had been taking his meal, and where his cowherd boyfriends remained just as before. Purport. The word Svabhuvam, to his own son, indicates that Lord Krishna forgave the offense Brahma had committed and treated him with affection as his son. It is stated in this verse that the original cowherd boyfriends and calves were situated just as before, near the bank of the Yamuna River and in the forest, respectively. Previously, the calves had disappeared within the forest, and Lord Krishna had gone to search for them. Not finding them, the Lord had returned to the river bank to discuss the situation with his cowherd boyfriends, but they had also disappeared. Now that the cows were once again in the forest, and the boyfriends once again on the bank of the river, ready to take their lunch. According to Srila Sanatan Goswami, the calves and boys remained in the forest and on the river bank, respectively, for one full year. Lord Brahma did not actually take them away to another place. By the Lord's omnipotent illusory energy, the gopis and other residents of Vrindavan did not notice the calves and boys, nor did the calves and boys notice the passing of a year's time, or feel any hunger, cold, or thirst. This was part of the pastime arranged by the Lord's illusory energy. Lord Brahma thought, I have kept all the boys and calves of Gokul sleeping on the bed of my mystic potency, and to this very day they have not risen. A similar number of boys and calves have been playing with Krishna for one whole year, yet they are different from the ones illusioned by my mystic potency. Who are they? Where did they come from? Nothing is invisible to the Supreme Lord. Thus, Lord Krishna appeared to be searching for the calves and boys, only to enact the dramatic pastime of bewildering Lord Brahma. After Brahma surrendered and offered prayers, Lord Krishna returned to the original boys and calves, who appeared exactly as before, although their size had somewhat increased because of one year's growth. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, since Lord Krishna was playing exactly like an innocent young cowherd boy in Vrindavan, after four-headed Brahma offered his prayers, the Lord maintained his role as a young cowherd boy and thus remained silent before Brahma. Krishna's silence indicates the following thoughts. Where did this four-headed Brahma come from? What is he doing? What are these words he keeps on speaking? I'm busy looking for my calves. I'm just a cowherd boy and do not understand all this. Lord Brahma had considered Lord Krishna an ordinary cowherd boy and had treated him as such. After accepting Brahma's prayers, Krishna continued to play as a cowherd boy, and thus did not answer the four-headed Brahma. Rather, Krishna was more interested in rejoining his cowherd boy friends for the picnic lunch on the bank of the Yamuna River. Translation again. After granting his son Brahma permission to leave, the Supreme Personality of Godhead took the calves, who were still where they had been a year earlier, and brought them to the river bank, where he had been taking his meal, and where his cowherd boy friends remained just as before. So this phrase, Swabhuvam, his own son, indicates, as we just read, that Lord Krishna had forgiven Lord Brahma for his offense and had accepted him with affection as his son. We all like Lord Brahma, have the tendency to make mistakes, to be illusioned, to have imperfect senses, and to cheat. Every conditioned soul does. And as aspiring devotees, we can also become bewildered in the discharge of devotional service and commit offenses against the Lord and his devotees. But Lord Brahma has also shown us the example of recognizing one's mistake, repenting for one's offense, glorifying the person who one has offended, and begging forgiveness. And Lord Krishna, as the affectionate father and friend of all living entities, and in particular of Lord Brahma, he forgave him and treated him affectionately. That is one level of the pastime. On another level of the pastime, Lord Krishna really didn't want to be too bothered with Lord Brahma. He wanted to enjoy his pastimes with his cowherd boyfriends and cats. One year earlier, they had been enjoying a picnic lunch by the banks of the Yamuna. It is described that Krishna was sitting in the center of the cowherd boys, like the whorl of a lotus flower, and the cowherd boys were sitting around him, like the petals of a lotus flower. And Lord Krishna was dealing so perfectly and affectionately with each boy that each boy felt as if Krishna is looking only at him and thinking only of him. And the calves wandered away, looking for new grasses. And when the boys noticed that the calves were missing, they became concerned, because although they were just young boys, still they had been given the charge of the calves to protect them. Gopal. Go means cow, and Pal means one who gives protection. So they became concerned that, oh, we have to find the calves and bring them back. But Krishna said, no, you enjoy your lunch, and I will go and find them and bring them back. So Krishna went, following the path left by the calf's hoof prints, and he could not find them. So he came back to the original spot. Think that he'll discuss with the other cowherd boys what to do. And he discovered that the cowherd boys themselves were missing. And then, as we discussed, he expanded himself into an exact duplicate set of cowherd boys and calves. So, after 1 year of the earth's time, which was one moment for Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma realized that he had made a mistake. And so he came to Lord Krishna and offered these humble, beautiful prayers. And Lord Krishna forgave him. But for the cowherd boys, this year also seemed like a moment. And so when Lord Krishna returned to them, the cowherd boys thought that, oh, our friend Lord Krishna is so attached to us. He couldn't bear to be away from us for even 2 moments. And so he came back after only 1 moment. So that is Krishna's affectionate dealing with his friends in Vrindavan. Now, a question arises because Krishna has these two aspects which Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses in one of his books. Mugdhata and Sarvagya. Sarvagya means he knows everything. And we see that here, that Krishna understood that Lord Brahma had stolen the cowherd boys and calves, and so he expanded himself into a duplicate set so that the residents of Vrindavan would not be in anxiety about the whereabouts of their children. But at the same time, when Lord Brahma returned after a moment of his time and offered prayers and apologies, Lord Krishna accepted his apologies and forgave him as an affectionate father forgives an errant son. But at the same time, in the mood of a cowherd boy, he is thinking, who is this person with four heads? What is he saying? I want to enjoy with my friends. What is he doing here? And that is the mood of Mugdhata, where he is completely immersed in the mood of being a simple cowherd boy and appears to be bewildered by things that happen. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur analyzes this question. And he says, well, one explanation could be that the Vishnu within Krishna is Sarvajna. He's all-knowing, that it's the Vishnu within Krishna who heard the prayers of Lord Brahma and forgave him. And it's the original Krishna, the cowherd boy, who is bewildered. Who is this person with four heads? What is he doing here? What are all these things he's saying? I just want to find my cowherd boyfriends and cats. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur raises a further question. If we want to serve Krishna in Vrindavan, and we pray hoping that our prayer will reach Krishna in Vrindavan, will our prayer actually reach Krishna in Vrindavan? Or will Krishna be so absorbed in his playing with his friends that he will not hear our prayers? And the Vishnu within Krishna will hear our prayers. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that that proposition is not very appealing or satisfying to a devotee who wants to serve Krishna in Vrindavan. He doesn't want his prayers to be heard by Vishnu. He wants his prayers to be heard by the original Krishna. But the original Krishna is fully absorbed in the mood of being a simple cowherd boy and playing with his friends. So how will he hear the prayers of so many devotees throughout the universe? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the answer that Yoga Maya arranges for Krishna to forget that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but also on occasion to remember that he's the Supreme Lord. There are so many examples, but let us say when there was a forest fire in Vrindavan. So the cowherd boys were threatened by the flames of the fire. The cows were threatened by the flames of the fire. And they were in a very precarious position. So if Krishna remained in the mood of a simple cowherd boy, just like the others, they all would have been burned in the fire. They would have been consumed by the flames. So Yoga Maya arranged at that time for Krishna to remember that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that he is full in all opulences, that he has all mystic powers, and thus he was able to swallow the forest fire. And then, when his purpose was fulfilled, Yogamaya again arranged for him to forget that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and for him to play with his cowherd boy friends, just like one of them. So Yoga Maya understands the Lord's purpose. And the Lord's purpose first and foremost is always to please his devotees. So when it is favorable for the his pastimes with his devotees to forget that he's the Supreme Lord, then Yogamaya arranges for him to forget, just as she arranges for them, for his friends, to see him just as a cowherd boy. But when it's favorable or necessary for his pastimes with his friends, for him to remember that he's the Supreme Lord, she reminds him, and thus he's able to take extraordinary actions such as swallowing the forest fire or lifting Govardhan Hill, killing so many demons. So it is all for the pleasure of his devotees and for the welfare of his devotees. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when a devotee in the material world who is aspiring specifically to serve Krishna in Vrindavan, not Narayan in Vaikuntha, prays to Krishna, Yogamaya arranges for Krishna to be aware of that devotee's earnest prayers and aspirations, and for Krishna, the original Krishna in Vrindavan, to reciprocate. And at the same time, when it's not necessary for Krishna to be aware of his devotees' prayers to him, she arranges for him to forget that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to be fully absorbed in his Narlila, his human-like pastimes. So this is a very intricate topic, very mysterious, and we find in the purport here that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is presenting one angle of vision and Srila Sanatan Goswami is presenting another angle of vision. And both could be true. And in fact, I would say both are true. But this is Achintya Shakti. These are Krishna's inconceivable potencies at work. And Achintya, by definition, inconceivable, means it's beyond the ability of our limited mind and senses to comprehend. And therefore, we need not be disturbed by apparent contradictions or differences in the statements of the scriptures or the previous acharyas. Once Prabhupada's disciple Revati Nandan Swami was very intelligent and analytical. So once he asked Srila Prabhupada that in some places we read that Lord Brahma was sitting on the lotus that sprouted from the navel of Lord Vishnu, And from his position on the lotus, he created the planets and the universe. And in other places, we read that all the planetary systems are within the stem of the lotus. So how do we reconcile these two apparently contradictory statements? And Srila Prabhupada replied that these topics are inconceivable. They are beyond the power of our teeny brains to comprehend. And our business is to love Krishna. And that is our business. Recently, I've had some talks with Brahmatirtha Prabhu, who was quite close to Sataputta Prabhu, who was a super genius, scientist, devotee. And Sataputta had amazing insights into the truth of the Bhagavatam statements about the universe. I don't remember all the details, and even when I heard them, I didn't understand them all exactly. But Sataputta calculated that based on the information in the Bhagavatam, one could calculate the relative distances between planets and predict the movements of the planets. And Sataputta Prabhu wrote a paper on the subject. There's probably more to it that I haven't mentioned. And he presented it to the leading astronomer of India, explained what is in it. And the astronomer refused to read it. He said, it's not possible. This knowledge of the relative position of the planets and the distance between the planets has existed only, whatever he said, 800 years, you know, according to their version of history, and it's not possible. You just see, it's like the Bhagavatam is so far beyond what these, you know, mundane... He wouldn't even read it. He was like, he just couldn't believe that. I mean, this is a whole other topic, which Sataputta and Jhutakarma discuss, and especially Jhutakarma now, the quote, knowledge filter. That the scientific community systematically filters out evidence that contradicts their established accepted views. They can really, and if someone in a field insists on bringing out information that contradicts their views, they can really try to ruin the person's career. There was one network television program, very big television program on NBC called, I think, The Mysterious Origins of Man. and the host was Charlton Heston, and they interviewed different scholars and archaeologists, including Sataputta and Jutakarma, and presented all sorts of evidence for the existence of human beings at an early period when, according to the prevailing view, there were no human beings and only lower species. But they had very strong archaeological evidence that human beings existed simultaneously along with all the other species, which is what the Bhagavatam tells us. It's not that lower species evolve into higher species and then after a long period of evolution, human beings exist. But just as now, human beings and aquatics and birds and beasts, they all exist simultaneously. So basically from the dawn of creation, they've all existed simultaneously. So the scientific community, when they heard about the television program, became very upset. And they did everything they could to stop it from being aired. But the network decided they would go ahead and air it. And it was so popular that the public wanted it to be broadcast again. So then the scientific establishment, they tried to stop it. I think even legally they tried to stop it from being aired. And then the network advertised it, you know, the program that the scientists don't want you to see, which made it even more interesting. So the knowledge filter is a very prominent feature of scientific and academic communities. There was one case of a very well-respected professor at Harvard University who had done interviews of people who claimed to have had encounters with beings from other planets. Now, there's been a lot of testimony from people who claim that they've seen UFOs, unidentified flying objects, and who even claim to have had interactions with beings who descended on UFOs and so on. And of course, the scientific establishment has tried their best to discredit the testimony of the people. So this Harvard professor did perhaps he was in the Department of Psychology. He did very extensive interviews with the people who testified that they had encounters. And he found, that they are, normal, emotionally stable, credible people. You know, the other side are saying, oh, they're like the lunatic fringe, they're crazy, it's the power of suggestion, it's, so many explanations they have. So, the other members of the Department of Psychology gathered together, and there's a proceeding by which the colleagues of a professor can have their colleague expelled from the department. So they all gathered together, and they inaugurated the procedure to have him expelled from the department. And fortunately, in this case, the attempt failed. They couldn't kick him out. But it just shows how strong the knowledge filter operates. So we really can't... And that was another thing in the mysterious origins of man. They showed examples of scientists, researchers, archaeologists who had discovered data that was contrary to the prevailing view and made the scientific establishment feel uncomfortable, and who had the courage to go ahead and publish their findings. And the television program showed how the scientific establishment ruined these people's careers. I mean, they just... it's very heavy. It's very, very heavy. But anyway, I mean, we don't have to worry about all that because we have knowledge from the scripture. Judhakarma also always says the same thing. He doesn't really need to do this archaeological research to find out the truth because he already knows the truth from Srimad Bhagavatam. But the reason he does it is so that people who don't have the same faith in the Vedic scriptures will see that what's stated in the Vedic scriptures is corroborated by archaeological evidence and so on. In the case of the universe and the planets, that it's corroborated by physics and mathematics. So it's a fight, as Srila Prabhupada always said, they have their tactics and we have our tactics. It's a fight. But now that the temple of Vedic planetarium is actually being built in Mayapur, it will definitely call attention to the Vedic view of the universe, and it will certainly spark lively debate. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Yes?
You mentioned when you were speaking about yoga life, it almost seems as if yoga maya is the gatekeeper of Krishna's affection, in the sense that if she wants Krishna to recognize or hear the prayers of the devotees, then she will make it so, and if she doesn't, then he won't.
Well, yoga maya is a faithful servant of Lord Krishna, and she knows that Krishna wants to encourage every devotee. So it's not that she's going to be like a secretary to a big man who has his own agenda, and like he'll only let the information reached the big man that he wants and not other. No, she's not. She doesn't have any separate interests. I mean, she's Krishna's energy. She's Krishna's energy. She can't have any separate interest. And she knows his purpose. And she very expertly and perfectly fulfills his intention.
So does it depend on the depth of the earnestness of our prayers that it will be true?
Yeah, they all get through. The question is whether it reaches Krishna in Vrindavan. Yeah, that's we're praying here. You know, Radha Kalachandri hear all our prayers. But is it, you know, the Kalachandri who's like trembling and swooning because of Radharani's beauty? Or is it the Kalachandri who's sitting and smiling and looking at all of us? So, yes, that's it. That's it. And, you know, in a way, it's not a matter of I want to be the best. You know, it's not a matter of false prestige. You know, oh, your prayers are only going to Vishnu. My prayers are going to Krishna. Krishna, you know, Vishnu is Krishna. And for probably some large proportion of what we're praying for Vishnu is sufficient, more than sufficient. And anyway, the deity form also is a little, it's again, it's simultaneously one and different. You know, I'm thinking of the story of Sakshi Gopal. It's Gopal, it's Krishna, the cowherd boy. But he gave up his pastimes in Vrindavan to follow the young Brahmin to Orissa to give testimony about the marriage. So, the deity is Krishna, it's the original Krishna. And again, of course, like Prabhupada said, we're worshipping the forms of Radha and Krishna, but our worship is in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. But on top of that mood, there can be another mood of serving Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. But, you know, ultimately, they're the same. But we also shouldn't be like Brahma. He thought, "Oh, I should leave now. You know, I don't want to disturb Krishna in his pastime." So we shouldn't be like demanding, like a small child, like demanding attention when the father or mother has some more important work. There's a very, just to give an example of how this interplay between Krishna and Vishnu takes place. Every year in Jagannath Puri, since the beginning, there's Snan Yatra, in which Lord Jagannath is taken from his personal quarters onto a public pavilion and bathed. And then, after the bathing ceremony, he catches cold and he's taken into his private quarters, and for 2 weeks he remains in seclusion while he is given medicine to help him recover. And during that period, repairs are made on the Lord's body, deity form. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would feel such intense separation from Lord Jagannath during that period, called Anavasara, that he could not remain in Puri. It was just too painful for him. So he would walk by foot about 14 miles to Brahmagiri, where there's the deity of Alanath, or Alalanath in Bengali. And so at the Alanath temple, there's a stone slab where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered obeisances, flat obeisances, and the stone is melted, and you can see the imprint of Mahaprabhu's body. Now, this is extraordinary. I mean, yes, there's the place in the Jagannath temple where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would stand by the Garuda Stambha and have darshan of Lord Jagannath, and you can see where the stone is worn away from repeated visits. So that's a very intense ecstasy, that to melt the stone. And so the question, and that deity is a four-handed Vishnu form. The deity was actually installed by Lord Brahma. It was a four-handed Vishnu form. So the question is, why of all places would Mahaprabhu go there, feeling separation from Jagannath, who he saw as Shamsundar directly, to Alanath, and which is a four-handed Vishnu deity. And then too, why would he feel such extraordinary ecstasy there? So the answer is given that this place, Alanath, of this deity, and the mood of this place corresponds to a place called Paita at Govardhan. Which is the place, I'm sure many of you are familiar with the story, it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that during the Rasa dance, Krishna left the gopis and hid himself in the bushes of Govardhan. And when the gopis realized that Krishna had left, they began marching as a group, determined to find him. And when they came near to the bushes where he was hiding, he came out of the bushes, and he assumed a four-handed Vishnu form. And the gopis, they thought it was Krishna from a distance, so they were very enlivened. Oh, it's not Krishna, it's Vishnu. It's Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan, have you seen Krishna? we're looking for Krishna. You know, they offered respect, and then when he didn't help them find Krishna, they just went in. They left him and went looking for Krishna. But then when Srimati Radharani came, he did the same thing. He appeared in his four-handed Vishnu form. But in front of Radharani's supreme love for him, he was unable to maintain his extra two arms, and he had to resume his original two-handed form as Shamsundar. So the explanation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Alanath is that deity is Lord Narayan, but it's not actually Lord Narayan. It's Lord Krishna pretending to be Lord Narayan or manifesting the form of Lord Narayan, but it's actually Krishna. And certainly in the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is fully endowed with the mood of Radharani, that Lord Narayan, so-called Lord Narayan, would definitely manifest himself as Krishna. So, so Lord Narayan is Krishna. He's always Krishna in the sense that he's an expansion of Krishna, and in Vrindavan, he's really Krishna. But just manifested in the form of Narayan. But it's, you know, Chinti Veda Veda Tattva, it's simultaneously one and different, so. Yes?
Coming from a background away from Christian consciousness, becoming Christian consciousness, we believe the scientists, and then when we come to Christian consciousness, we understand that what they're saying is not true. We have a different paradigm of looking. And so when doubts come about
well, it's not that everything they say is not true. Prabhupada said that, you know, on the very smallest level, they don't know what's going on. And on the very biggest level, they don't know what's going on. But there's a section in between where they do have a sense of what's going on, but they don't have the background, or they don't see it in the proper perspective of, you know, say, Krishna within the atom, or, you know, Krishna is the origin of the whole cosmic manifestation. But yes, continue.
I'm just wondering how we can, like, stay immersed in this knowledge instead of, you know, going back to the community of evolution, where I think, so, for example, when the moon landing came, we appreciate Prabhupada's point on that. And so, how can we protect ourselves from getting away from the Srimad concept about the truth?
Well, that's a good question. Well, I would say the main thing is sadhana. So, chanting, Chaito Darpano Marjanam, the chanting cleanses the dust from the mirror of the mind. And you, when the dust is removed, you see the reality of, you know, Krishna consciousness and the illusory nature of of the material modes which are conducting the scientists and academics. But, you know, Prabhupada wanted, you know, Bhakti Srupa Damodar Swami and Sariputta Prabhu and others to present this, the same philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam in scientific language, so that people conditioned by scientific evidence, being conditioned to accept scientific evidence, will take it more seriously. But, you know, there's a huge volume of evidence, you know, in the archaeological record that man has existed, you know, from as far back as we can trace. And so you can read these books, Forbidden Archaeology. Then there's the sort of condensed version of Forbidden Archaeology called The Hidden History of the Human Race. And then Judhakarma Prabhu had a regular column in some alternative scientific or archaeological journal. And so his columns have been collected in a book called The Forbidden Archaeologist. So you can read those things. You can read those things. There's plenty of evidence. Plenty of evidence.
So
well, minute living entities were never God. I mean, what the Mayavadis say that we're God, but we've forgotten. I mean, that's just not true that we were God. We forgot. It's absurd. Krishna is God, and to enjoy pastimes with his devotees in Vrindavan, this is not in other places, this is only in Vrindavan, that he forgets that he's God, and so that he can enjoy those intimate relationships. And it's the same thing. I mean, we're talking of Yoga Maya as if she was a separate personality, which in a way she is, but ultimately, she's Krishna. She's a part of Krishna, who Krishna has delegated this assignment to. But she's ultimately Krishna. It's Krishna, reminding himself when he wants to be reminded, and Krishna allowing himself to forget when he wants to forget. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.